Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and this is the Downtime Podcast, where I take you behind the scenes of downhill and enduro mountain biking. This episode of the podcast is kindly supported by Cushcore. I've been using Cushcore for a year now, and I love what they do to the way the bike rides. The bike is more damped, it rolls faster and maintains momentum better over rough terrain, and I feel like I've got way more support in the corners. They really do allow you to go bigger, corner harder, and ride faster with total confidence, and it's no surprise that riders like Loic Bruni choose to use them. They've also added a new XC version, which is a fair bit lighter. It obviously provides a little less of the benefits, but it might be worth a try if weight is an issue for you. Remember, not all inserts are created equal. So to find out a bit more about how Cushcore works, you can check out our episode with their founder, Adam, over at downtimepodcast.com/Cushcore. It was one of our most popular episodes of last year, so give it a listen. To get your hands on some Cushcore, then just head to cushcore.com. If you want a chance to win a set of Cushcore in your chosen size, then all you need to do is to help me out. I want to find out a little more about my listeners, not only to help me make better content for you, but also to help when I'm talking to brands about supporting the podcast, which is ultimately what keeps this thing going. So I have a short listener survey over on my website at downtimepodcast.com/survey that I'd love you to go and fill in. It'll only take you a couple of minutes. Everyone who does so and enters an email address will automatically be entered into the prize draw for your very own set of Cushcore that will transform your ride. Don't worry, I won't be sharing your personal information with anyone, and all the privacy info is at the top of the form. You'll also find a link to the survey in the show notes for this episode over on downtimepodcast.com. I'm fairly sure that a lot of you who are listening to this podcast are locked down to some extent, and I wanted to try and find a way to alleviate some of the boredom of the current situation. So along with putting out the podcast as usual, I wanted to create something that was more interactive for you all to get involved in. So like half of the rest of the world, it seems, I'm going to be going live. This Wednesday, the 1st of April at 8 p.m. GMT, I'm going to be hosting a live video chat with Nico Mullally and Elliot Jackson, and hopefully a special surprise guest. And I want you to join in and ask them the questions. We'll be live streaming to the Downtime Facebook channel, so make sure you subscribe to that at facebook.com/downtimepodcast. You'll then be able to type your questions into the comments and we can answer them for you right there and then. So if you've got a question for Nico or Elliot or our special guest, then tune in this Wednesday, the 1st of April at 8 p.m. GMT and ask away. If you're not able to make it to watch it live, then I'll try and get it uploaded to our YouTube channel afterwards so you can watch it on catch up there. To make sure you get your weekly fix of the podcast, then head to downtimepodcast.com/subscribe. There's links there that will help you subscribe on whatever platform is best for you. While you're at it, you should join our newsletter to receive our weekly weekend warm-up email for a few bits of interesting bike-related stuff coming to your inbox on a Friday. You can do all that on the same page. All of our merch sales are currently closed due to suppliers shutting down to stop the spread of the virus. You can, however, still make a Share the Love donation over at downtimepodcast.com/shop. Please keep on spreading the word and making sure all of your riding mates are listening to the podcast. And don't forget to give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. All right, it's time for a COVID-free chat with Jesse Melamed. Jesse was on the podcast a couple of years back, and before this virus thing went fully global, we sat down for a catch-up. We chat about him moving on to the new Slayer for the 2020 season and how he's approached getting that set up. We cover the highs and lows of his last couple of seasons of racing and reflect on what it'll take for him to put it all together into the season his form shows that he deserves. Jesse has an analytical mind, so it's always good to hear his thoughts on things, including, of course, mullet bikes. So, without further ado, here's Jesse Melamed. Jesse Melamed, welcome back to the Downtime Podcast. How's it going?
Thank you very much. It's good to be back. It's going pretty well.
Good stuff. So, you're in Arizona at the moment, are you?
I am, yeah.
What have you been up to?
I've just been obviously riding a ton and training. This was kind of the last time I could get away before the season. And with the two races on the calendar that start the season this year, they're both unique in different ways. And I remember Chile is obviously famous for its anti-grip. And I've been to Phoenix once before last year. And I just remember it being actually really, really fun to ride and just loose, rocky terrain, so I wanted to come and get familiar with that.
Okay, so yeah, it's something similar to the style of the riding that you might see at some of those, well, at Chile anyway, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And then Colombia can be kind of anything depending on what the weather throws at you, but at home we kind of have ruddy, really slippery stuff. Not nearly the same, but there's nowhere I could think of close enough that I could get similar conditions. So I picked Chile over Colombia.
Yeah, fair play. And is it also quite warm down in Arizona compared to back at home?
It's way different. That was another reason is I'm kind of on a new, just set up to the Slayer for now. And I couldn't really test it at home because it's just cold and nothing really works. And you've got five layers on and you know the trails so well. So it just doesn't really work. So immediately coming to Phoenix first day, I was like, wow, my setup is way off.
Okay. What? Because everything heats up and the oil gets
a bit thinner. Yeah, it just gets through actually a usable temperature, which is nice. And then your body as well. Like, yeah, it's just everyone like surrounding the hot. It's not too hot. It's only like 20, like mid 20s, even at that. So at home, it was kind of just getting above freezing for the most part.
Yeah, not ideal training weather then, really, is it?
No, but it's also, our trails are very good, so I'm pretty happy to ride when it's cold.
Yeah. And do you feel like you've made some good progress then with bike setup? Are you feeling quite a lot faster than when you turned up with that bike?
Yes and no. I'm definitely an overthinker. So I would say, yes, I've made like huge leaps and bounds, but nothing's ever really good enough for me. So I'm still just, you know, we're 7 days in and I'm leaving and I'm like, ah, I could have done more. But wow. I really think that that's just me nitpicking and I do feel like I made a ton of changes and I'm super happy with where I'm at now.
Yeah. And do you manage to turn off that super critical thing by the time you get to a race, or is that still there? Are you still wanting
to fiddle? Yeah, well, that's the whole thing that I do, not on purpose, but I definitely tweak a lot and I'm just stressed out about all little details. But then once it comes to race time, my mind is fully focused on racing and that just all goes out the window. And I know that I've kind of like really removed all the uncertainty. And so that's kind of what it is that once I get to the race, it's like, I've done so much, like there's no way it can't possibly be pretty damn good. So, I just kind of don't think about it and go to racing and my bike's usually pretty well set up because I've fretted about it for so long.
Nice, nice. So what sort of things have you been playing around with then? Is it quite a broad...
It's been a long process, like over the course of the winter even. So since I had that hand injury last year, that really messed me up for a long time. And actually only until a month ago was I able to get my finger fully around my handlebar grip because it just wouldn't bend past a certain degree. So that was pretty frustrating. But so that's good. And then so I was testing... different grips then and different handlebars. And so now, you know, I'm obviously staying sponsor correct, but just on this trip, I was testing handlebar width, handlebar height, stem length, couple different grips. And that's just kind of cockpit stuff. And then suspension is obviously many settings to do with suspension.
For sure. And that whole cockpit thing, like height of bar and stem and then width and roll of the bar, it feels like it has a huge impact on the way the bike handles, but it's really hard to pin down.
It totally. And that's, you kind of have to get to the point with your bike where those things start to become apparent, which, you know, you might not notice it, which is totally fine. Because maybe, I don't know, you're riding just every weekend, but when you start riding every day and you start building up speed on your bike, I mean, most of the winter I wasn't trying to go fast. I was just out riding my bike just if I want to for fun, because I just want to limit the risky situation I put myself in, and I had no issue. It's like, oh, my bike is sweet, like whatever. And then as soon as you start to kind of find that edge and go faster and faster is when you really start to break down these things and you're like, oh, like this felt weird and this felt weird. And going to the Slayer was it's a longer bike, so that kind of, you know, it took me, how long have I been on the Instinct for, like 2.5-3 years almost, and just last season I really felt like this bike, I've done everything, like there's nothing I need to change, this bike is sick, I'm happy with it. So that was like almost a two-year more than a two-year process to figure everything out for that bike. And so it's always kind of a, you know, people would probably think it's super exciting getting a new bike, and I think most pros would argue that because they just know it's a daunting task to try to figure out a new bike. There's so many setup details and how to ride the bike. It rides differently. And that's kind of what I've been going through for the last 2 months as I start to ramp things up.
Yeah, fair play. It's a lot of work. Let's pick something kind of relatively simple out of that list of bits. So let's talk about bar width. Mm-hmm. How do you go about trying to find what's right for you? What approach have you taken to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. It's what's right for you. So I started like years ago, I think I was on 760 mils. And that was good. I was happy. And then I don't know for what reason, but I started to cut my bars down. And like 1 year I went to 750, and then 1 year I went to 740. And I was just happier and happier. And I've been on 740 for probably a year or two. Mm-hmm. And then I got into the Slayer, and it was a little bit longer. And so I had two thoughts. I was like, okay, it's a longer bike. It's kind of bigger. But maybe I want to be more stable. So I want a wider bar, which, you know, it kind of mutes a lot of little steering inputs from your body. So, yeah. You know, it's funny when I used to coach, kids camps every summer, not too long ago. And if kids were being too twitchy, we'd always tell their parents to put a wider handlebar on, because it removes that input and kind of makes them more stable right away. So a wider handlebar does make your steering a little bit more stable. It allows you to have more force for your steering if you're having trouble kind of, you know, getting your bike into a turn. But the other side to that is if you have a narrower handlebar, your reach actually kind of becomes shorter because you're bringing your hands more in, which means you're not reaching out as far, which is one of the reasons I did it. And I was also finding I was struggling to lean the bike over. And so a wider handlebar might help you to do that. But I was feeling like I wanted a narrower handlebar that I could lean the bike over and be more on top of the bar. So If I have a narrow handlebar, you know, if I'm turning left, my left arm doesn't have to be stretched out so far to the ground. And I'm over top of my right arm, able to push that bike down and hold it. Yeah. And that's kind of where I was really noticing the narrower handlebar, and I kind of liked it. And also, I remember over the last few years when I was going narrower and narrower, the minute, you know, what 10 mils that you go narrower feels like a foot when you're going past skinny jeans all the time. Like it's crazy, the difference. And I remember, like, as soon as I switched, no matter how it felt, I was like, man, I can't go back. Like, just having that extra room going by the trees is so nice.
So what approach have you taken then on this trip? Have you been running different bar widths? Are you just repeating the same run over and over? Are there particular sections that you've been picking that have kind of characteristics that you're interested in? How have you approached finding what you feel right on?
Try not to make it too much hassle. I wanted it to be a fun trip mentally as well as you know, get some good training and testing. So I wasn't picking runs, and I wasn't changing it back to back. I'd just go up for big rides and kind of change something for the day, and then have a few things throughout the day that I would change if I felt like it. But it was kind of just, for me at this point, it's overall feeling, because I feel like I said, I can get to a race and I can pretty much ride any setup and I'll do pretty well, and I'm confident about that. But it's about just getting every detail out of the way and making sure that what I am on is the best thing. So I just want to know, and it might not be anything better. I might not make any changes, but I just want to know that, you know, a narrow bar from this point isn't better, and a wider bar is better. So I didn't try wider bar here, because I tried one at home, and I was like, it just doesn't work. And that may be possible. I'm a smaller guy. Like, you know, everyone wants to wide handlebar, but I feel like 740 is pretty good for me. But then I cut a bar to 735, and I was like, that's pretty sweet. And so I'm going to go home and maybe try 730 just for laughs, and we'll see. That might be too narrow. But I don't know. I just need to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you got to try these things, right? But that's pretty narrow in the kind of modern bar width, I suppose. Like,
everyone, definitely. But I mean, it's only narrow because it's narrow in a number, but relatively it might not be so narrow. Like, if you look at you know, Richie and Jared always come to mind, because, you know, they I remember Jared always had super narrow bars, and I feel like, I don't know if Richie got it from Jared or Richie is just doing it on his own, but their bars are pretty relatively narrow to their shoulder width. Mm-hmm. And you can always tell when you see them on their bikes. And so, I mean, they might run, I don't know, 750, 760s, but they're big guys. So like for them, that's really narrow.
Yeah, I suppose. Whereas for you, 740, maybe 735. Yeah, I like the fact you're working in 5 millimeter increments.
Never looks like my bars are too narrow for me.
Yeah, cool. Good stuff. Sounds like it's been a productive trip then. That's the main thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been pretty good. It's been stressful though. Like I said, all these little things just kind of get to me more than they should. And I don't know. I have to figure out how to not let them get to me.
Well, but if it's a process that you've kind of followed in the past and you know it helps you, that by the time you get to the race, you feel confident, for sure. Maybe that's okay.
Well, and that's exactly it. Now, like, you know, we have 3 weeks until we're leaving, and I feel like in that time I can hopefully just focus on other things and my bike is dialed. So
yeah. And what's training looking like at the moment, other than the setup kind of stuff? Are you what do you focus on?
This one was unique and different from years past, because usually I go away in the fall and I do big road rides, and I go to the desert with my family and just do lots of long, slow pace and just get out for big rides. But I didn't do that this year because I had a pretty busy fall with media projects. So, and I didn't think it'd be an issue. And then I was kind of like mid-winter and training, and I was like, man, like, I'm just doing so much kind of intensity and getting burnt out. I need to go back and just do some long riding and get out and just be outside all day. Like, I just really like to do that. And so when this opportunity came up, I just came to Phoenix and I was like, okay, my main goal is just to ride as much as I can for a week. And just, you know, I'll have a month to recover before the races. So I didn't think it would make me too tired, and just kind of get some really long days. And then we're also getting close to the season, so I was just doing some shorter intensity stuff, but making sure it wasn't going to affect my ability to go for the whole day.
Yeah. And are you doing that on your own?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do my own like programming. I used to have a trainer from Whistler, and I still kind of talk to him for advice from time to time, but I feel like working with him for, I think, 3 or 4 years, I just learned quite a bit, and I'm really happy, and I'm plenty motivated by myself. So I don't need someone to tell me what to do. It's more like, I do need maybe a little bit of direction on what to do when, but otherwise I just like to have my own schedule so that I can do what I need to do when I need to do it and when I feel like I can do it. And then I do have a strength coach who I work with.
Fair play. And you mentioned that you would often ride with your family at this time. Yeah, I didn't realize, but oh, like your mum, your dad, and your brother are all pretty into riding, yeah?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of my origin story. Is my parents, they moved to Whistler something 40 years ago now for skiing, because that's obviously what was famous for back then. And then when they didn't have anything to do in the summers, they just started mountain biking. And they're huge into mountain biking, and both me and my brother were brought up mountain biking. And we all used to go away to races as a family when I was younger, and that was really special. And then my brother went to school and stopped, but he's fully back into it, and now is like, I think he's probably sick of me by now, because he's like my one, like, I wouldn't say confidant, I don't know if that's the right word, but he's just like, every day I've been talking to him about my setup and what he thinks, and like sending him videos of my suspension and be like, okay, what do you think about this? Like, and just, yeah, I'm taking up a lot of his time, but he's like the only person that I feel maybe thinks like me, understands what I need, and like I just trust, really. Like, he may not be a suspension engineer, but he's got a masters of controls and engineering, so he's super smart, and I just trust what he says. So it's great to still have him involved in that way. But yeah, when I was a kid, pretty much every spring, from when I was too young to ride, I would be put in daycare. My family would drive down to Moab, and we'd go to Moab for a couple of weeks in camp. And yeah, I remember being put into this super shitty daycare that I hated. And like, I just thought it was a prison. I complained to my parents all the time, and I think they cared, but they didn't really care because they were out riding. And then finally I was old enough to ride after a couple of years. And I think I went there for like 15 years, probably every year. So that was really special. And now, yeah, like I said, in the fall now we kind of try to go, cause for me it works as end of season, and I just can kind of get away. And it's really like, I was just thinking about it when I was on this trip here. I was like, man, I would love to do that again next year. Just go to the desert, go riding with them. They have their friends that come along, and it's just great to kind of be in different groups, and then come back to the campsite, just drink beer, eat chips. And it's really freeing as a professional athlete.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds awesome. And yeah. I heard a little rumor that it was your brother that convinced you to run Kushcore in the front wheel as well as the rear wheel after listening to the podcast we did.
Yeah, exactly. So he listened to the Kushcore podcast, and he was like, man, I think you should try the Kushcore in the front. And I was like, nah, like it's too heavy. Like I don't want to do it. Maybe once they make a lighter one. And he's like, you need that Kushcore, like the one that they've built, the regular one.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, and like I said, he's the only one that I would listen to pretty much, cause I'm quite stubborn, and maybe we're both stubborn, but, I was like, okay, yeah, I'll try it. And then I put it in, and like, it's not for rim impacts, because you don't get as many of those in the front, but you still do from time to time, but it's just the cornering. And as soon as like I felt it, it was one of those things when I went back, I was like, holy crap. Like that's super weird. Like my tire is just like flat, but just for the cornering, so that, because the Kushcore is like kind of clamped down on your wheel and it's pushing out on the tire, it really holds your tire shape. So there's no tire roll, and you know, maybe you're losing something in traction, or like maybe your tire gives away a little bit more because there's no, like your tire won't roll to kind of catch when it starts to give away in a corner. But I just found that the consistency in cornering was so nice, and just kind of, it just dug in, the knobs dug in, and I felt like my corner would stay on its arc rather than like I'd be in a hard corner and then my tire would kind of start to flex and roll, and it would, you know, it'd be pushing me out of my arc. And I just didn't like that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And with but you're already running quite a strong sidewall tire as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Full DH usually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're pushing things pretty hard. And then just having like, obviously the impact protection on the front is again, pretty nice. It does help the suspension. It dampens a lot of little things. We're hitting things so fast that one impact can just wreck your wheel. And you know, you're not going to run exo tires because you don't want one impact to flat your tire. So for me, it's like, why wouldn't I run Kushcore if one impact can ruin my run? Because that's going to happen.
Fair play. And your dad's pretty handy as well. I saw a little video bit of you two riding together, and he wasn't messing about.
No, yeah. He's, of course, both my mom and my dad. My mom's had to slow down in recent years. They would both probably surprise a lot of people with what they can ride. My dad's probably only gotten better now that he's retired. He was pretty busy when he was working full time, so he didn't get to ride as much. And now all he does is he rides probably as much as I do, almost not time wise, but gets out almost every day. And it's pretty crazy. Yeah, filming that for Shimano's This Is Home was kind of terrifying at times. Like the trail we did was Gargamel, which is a super gnarly trail in Whistler. And, you know, we're doing this one line. I was like, are you sure you want to do this? He's like, yeah, it's fine. And I was like, okay. And so I'm doing my thing in front, and all I hear is just this like, oh no. And he just like this kind of this double roll thing, just kind of got the back end picked up and just rode the front and like almost went over the bars and would have had a huge wreck. And I was like, oh, like, are you okay? And then the guys, of course, were like, we could do that one more time. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do it because my dad, I don't want him to have to do that again. I was like, oh no, I'm okay. And then he goes again and just does the exact same thing and almost goes over the front, but saves it. So
yeah fair play. Pretty, impressive.
Pretty funny.
Yeah. And he's quite into trail building as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's pretty much his main pastime now. Summer and winter, he's got a fat bike, and he just loves, we got this trail close to our house, and he just goes and packs down like whenever it snows with snowshoes. So he packs it down with snowshoes and makes it rideable for a fat bike, which is just a never ending job because we obviously just keep on getting snow. And then hikers like from, or walkers from other neighborhoods will kind of go on that trail and kind of post hole it, which makes it really hard to ride. He always gets super upset, and he's like, I want to leave a pair of snowshoes at the side of the trail so people use snowshoes and stop wrecking my trail that I packed down. but so in the winter he's doing that. And then in the summer, yeah, he just goes out and has his little projects. He doesn't really do anything legit. He's done, he actually worked on the Top of the World Trail in Whistler and did all the rock climbing for that trail. So that was kind of a cool little paid gig that he got to do. And then otherwise he hasn't done much else, I think, paid. And he just goes out and he just really likes, he used to be a stonemason when he was younger. And so he likes to work with rock and just chisel rock into shapes and move these massive, massive rocks into place. And it's insane the stuff he's built. He's got a new line that he finished last summer that I'm trying to get something, I'd love to get something published for, just because it's insane. Like, you know, the stories he comes home and tells about how he moves stuff on his own. It's just hilarious. And there's this one that I wish I time-lapsed because he's just like this boulder that's like maybe the size of a, I don't know, half a small car, like a huge boulder. And he's got they're called come-alongs, where you like basically have a rope wrapped around the rock, and then it's attached to a tree or sometime, and you have this ratchet thing that you can pull it with, so you like slowly pull it into place. But he had two of those pulling in different directions, trying to angle this rock down this face. So he had one from the top and one from the side, and just like running back and forth, pulling one, pulling the other, pulling one, pulling the other, just trying to like slowly move this rock, because he just goes in the forest and finds these big rocks that he needs for his like big line. And yeah, it's just insane. And so he, for the longest time, had not a single injury, like never broke a bone doing all of this stuff. And last year he just for the first time broke his finger because he had his huge rock just crush his hand.
Nasty.
So yeah, he's insane.
That's amazing. Sounds like he's living the dream.
I would say he's probably living the dream. Yeah, it's great. He's just renovating my parents' basement right now. So that's kind of probably, he just needs to keep himself busy at this point.
Awesome. But,
yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, let's talk a bit about the racing side of things. So last time we got together and chatted was early 2018, and you just finished the first two rounds. So it was Chile and Colombia, I think you just done. And then after that, you were off to Largue, it would have been, I think, in France.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. How did that race go for you? That wasn't one of the better ones, I think.
No, that one was a broken collarbone. Yeah.
And was that at the same time your mum was injured? I'm sure I remember seeing a picture of both of you in slings.
Yeah, so the reason I said my mum had to slow down is because she's just, maybe I've gotten her curse where she's had a lot of injuries. What was that one? Honestly, I don't even remember. She might have gotten surgery on her shoulder because it was popping out too much. So she got it repaired. We were both in slings at the same time. It started well. I think I was second on the first stage. I think I was within a second of Richie on that first stage, and things were going well. And I just remember it exact. Like, I really liked the trail, and I was getting into the flow of it. And there's this one section where in practice I kind of got hung up behind someone, so I didn't get to hit it full speed. And it was kind of this quick, like right to left and then straight. And you kind of had to bounce to the left because there's a tree on the exit. And I just didn't hit it at speed in practice. And then so in the race, I was just like flowing, everything was going good. And I like went right and I went left, and I just kind of popped out of the left more than I thought I would. And I kind of like was popping out, unweighting and turning to go straight, and my wheels just never kind of touched the ground. So I just, you know, I just kind of fading left, and then just went straight to my shoulder. So,
oh man,
that was shitty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
you had a pretty quick recovery from that though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that season was a very tough one because, I broke my collarbone there. And then within 6 weeks, I was flying to the next race, not having been on a bike. But I got surgery from a really sweet doctor in the city, and they're like, yeah, I mean, as long as you don't crash on it, it's totally fine. It can handle the impacts of riding and should be okay. And I was like, okay, like I trust that I can ride and not crash. Like I can ride at 80% and be maybe 90%, 95% confident that I'm not going to crash. Unfortunately, it was Slovenia, and it was super wet on some of the first stages. Like, shit, like this is the worst, because I can't ride it. I can't ride a wet, slimy trail and be fully confident that I can't crash. So I was a little bit worried, but yeah, I ended up coming back from that one and finishing top 10, I believe. So that was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. That's got to give you a good chunk of confidence to be riding cautiously and coming back from injury and still being able to place 10th at around.
I mean, I was still thinking like, is this a dumb idea? So it wasn't much confidence building. But yeah, okay. it was definitely sweet. And then the race after, I think I was that was Latweel. I think I was on podium pace, and something happened. I think I was fourth or fifth on that one. So that one was better, because like, okay, I'm gonna push a little bit more. It's only a week later, but yeah, that was super good. And then unfortunately broke my hand at the next one, which was shitty, because just another little just like tumble, basically. Like I just rolled out of it all fine. And then I was like, oh man, I just broke a metacarpal in my hand. And I went and saw my friend who works in the clinic. This is in Whistler. And he's like, well, I don't have to cast this right now. And if you want to try to ride, you can ride. And I tried, but I couldn't do it. It's too much pain, which if we fast forward to this year is why I tried so hard to ride Whistler with my broken hand. Cause I was like, I just really felt like I gave up too easily on my broken hand 2 years ago. And I was really just upset with myself, because I just hate letting people down. And I feel like, you know, that's my race. I want to be there for my home crowd. And I just felt shitty. And so this year I was like, there's no way I'm not riding. And so I did everything I possibly could to make sure I could ride that race. And this time I did, which was great.
Yeah, cool. Definitely want to ask a little bit about that.
But going back 2 years ago, I just broke my hand. It was not a huge injury, but again, I was, you know, the EWS is kind of nice in that there's these big breaks. So had a 5.5 week break. And again, I was flying to Europe without having been on a bike and going to give it a go. And again, 2 top 10 finishes to finish the year. So definitely, you know, that's kind of the frustrating part though, is without these injuries, you know, I think until, again, fast forwarding, until Whistler this year, where I finished 29th, but just gone super chill, I hadn't been outside the top 10 in like 2.5 years, I think. Every race, no matter coming back from injury, no matter what, I was just top 10 every race. So that's a pretty good streak, but I just obviously need to figure out consistency, which I tried to do this year. And it was working, but then it didn't.
Yeah. So at the end of the 2018 season, then kind of looking backwards over the season for you, obviously some highs there, some really good results, some still really good results through adversity, and then some lows with the injury and maybe a bit of a lack of consistency in places. How do you go? What do you do at the end of a season? Do you sort of reflect on that? Do you self-assess? Do you use that to plan your goals for the off season and the following
year? So I'm always looking forward. I feel like I finished that season, and the last thing I remember was the last race of the season, and I was, I don't know, seventh or something. And I was like, okay, like that's a pretty good race, but it's not where I want to be. So just get to work, and that's pretty much it. And then, you know, that's the immediate thinking. And then I will always look back, and even now I look back and I'm like, ah, like I'm just so close. Like I know it's just right there. And that's the frustrating part, is, you know, you do so much and you put so much into it and you sacrifice so much, and then just things can go slightly different and it could be so much better. So I'm definitely super grateful. It makes me very grateful for you know, Rocky Mountain and all my sponsors that stick with me and people that stick with me, because, you know, I haven't made it easy. It's been a roller coaster, and it's funny. I was just thinking about this the other day. I don't know anyone who follows Supercross, but, you know, if you pick up two guys like Roxanne or Tomac, And Tomac hasn't really had injuries. Roxon's got a bit injuries. Maybe he's not the best one to pick, but he's just who he's thinking of because he's winning right now. But, you know, Tomac, I think, is one of the best rider when he's on. But over the last few seasons, he's struggled so much in Supercross because he keeps on crashing and throwing races away. And I look at Tomac now as less of like just this, like this dominant force, and more of like almost like with a little bit of pity, being like, man, if you just like cleaned up some of those races, you'd have a title by now. Whereas Roxon has like hasn't won a title either, but I'm like, damn, like Roxon's so sick, like he's just so fast and he's so good. And so it's just these ways that you look at these people, even though one is like Tomac's probably won, I don't know, twice as many races as Roxon in the last few years, but I guess Roxon was injured. But yeah, it's just the way you look at things in a different view. Like everyone I know like thinks of me as like, man, like if he could just stop crashing. And it's really frustrating because I'm not obviously not trying to, and I know that people like look at me through this lens of just slight pity because it's just, you know, he's fast and he can do it, but he just keeps crashing. So
what's your view on that kind of balance between consistency and risk taking and injury? Where do you sit on all of that? Because like you say, it sounds like you don't feel like you're putting yourself at risk, but the crash it's a fine line, right?
I just don't I don't know if I can answer that, because saying it's bad luck is taking the blame off myself, which I don't think I should do, because I am the one like on the bike, and not I'm the one making mistakes, and lots of people don't make mistakes. But I just think, yeah, just I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I like to go fast. I like to have fun on my bike. And for me, that is just getting into this flow state where it's just things just work. And then, yeah, I don't know. Things have just kind of gone wrong. And I can look at like all of my crashes are just like burned into my memory, so I can replay them over and over again. And just, I need to like, I'm a very calculated person. I need to understand what went wrong with that, so that I can obviously process it and get over it. And I've gotten over all those crashes. Like I can think about them and be like, yeah, okay, like this happened, that happened, whatever. I do have a theory as to why a lot of them happen, but I don't know. Don't really want to go into it at this point until I can confirm that. But yeah, fair, it's just enough. I don't know. Like I just, people maybe misunderstand why I ride the way I do. I find myself hard to contain. I just really like to have fun. And, you know, when I'm riding with friends even, and I just, you know, I maybe do quote stupid things all the time, but I don't like, I just like to do shit. I just, you know, and it comes from my skiing days. I grew up being really big into skiing, and I had a super awesome group of friends that I'd ski with all the time. And we just all kind of like amp each other up and do things. But skiing is this, our powder days, basically, like we had these crazy lines that pretty much no one on the mountain kind of knows how to link them together. Like we just had this cliff to that cliff to this run to this thing, like, and we'd go there pretty much every powder day. And it's just all about like, because there's a group of six or seven of you, the landing kind of gets stomped out. So you have to find your landing. And so it's always just like lining it up, seeing like, okay, like I gotta get like pop off here and get to that landing there. So it's always like start and finish, kind of finding, like lining these things up. And so that's exactly where my biking stock comes from. I'm always kind of like lining things up and being like, okay, I'll pick up here and like land there and do that. And then I just feel like I have this confidence to kind of nail a lot of one-off lines. And I just like to make things work that don't work or shouldn't work. And so that's why maybe people think that they're stupid, but for me, it's not like showboating or showing off. It's just, I like to make things work that maybe work. Just needs to happen.
Yeah. And that's what creates the differentiation that gives those few riders at the very top the lead. I think you see most of those top riders throughout history, they've always been able to find those little elements to the trail that other people missed, whether it was a classic Sam Hill inside line or a gap, or, you know, just a little feature somewhere that you could get some speed out of. Or so I think, it fit that feels like it's the approach that you, like people need.
Yeah,
but
like also, say, it's also just built. It's confidence building. It's kind of like, you know, from my skiing, and I still carry this confidence from even way back then of just like lining something up and being able to do it. And then when you do those things on the bike constantly, and then you're racing, you know, when we're racing half blind, we've obviously seen the stage, but you can't remember the whole thing, and you'll come up to something and you'll like, oh, be like, oh shit, like I want to do this line over there, like really quickly. And then you just have to know that I can do that because I can kind of do any line that I feel like I can do. I wouldn't, if I didn't see it, if it didn't kind of pop up in my mind, I don't think I could, I wouldn't have thought I could do it. You know what I mean? So like, if I saw it, I think I can do it. And then I just do it. And so, yeah, I think that really helps, like really in the moment, seeing lines and thinking you can do them. And I think that's, Sam might like, maybe that's what it is. Like he's just drawn to insides. I don't know how he works, but I think it's it's really cool how different he rides. And I'm always fascinated when I see like certain lines that he's come up with. And you know, it's tough to not just go wide and smash the rut. Like it's slower to go, well, it's slower speed to go inside, but maybe like faster in the long run. And it's, I don't know, he just believes in it, which is what you need to do, because it obviously is quicker, but it's counterintuitive, right? Like you're going slower but making a line that's faster. And he's doing that everywhere, which is like, I don't know, when I try to do insides, I feel slow. And I'm like, well, shit, I should have just gone outside and like tried to smash the corner and then sprinted out of it. But maybe that's not quicker. Yeah.
Maybe the maths work slightly different in his head somehow.
Definitely. And like, he, you know, people can try to ride like Sam Hill, but you can't because you're not Sam Hill. So he just has a mind that works in a different way, and it works for him.
So if someone came to you that the day at the end of a practice day and showed you a clip of someone else doing a gap that you hadn't seen on your sighting run, what would you do about that?
If I thought it was faster, I'd probably see if I could do it. It's great because there's a few examples this year in Canada's Eye, there was this sick gap that Adrian Dighty did, and it's just like, I don't know if I can explain it, but it was just so cool. And I was like, man, that's sick. And it was definitely faster, but I was like, well, I can't do that blind, and I don't need to do it. And then I think Greg did it once he saw Adrian did it. And that was really cool. So like, there was one example. And then in finale at the end of last year, there was this like massive, and I saw it when I was practicing, actually, it was on DH Men. And it was just like this big straight step down double, super hard into a corner. And you're kind of skipping just like super rough, chattery stuff into the corner. So like either way, the corner is going to be tough to make. And I was like, man, like there's a double here for sure. Like you just pull it and you land there. I just wasn't confident in my ability to hit the corner afterwards. So I was like, I'm not going to do it. And then I saw Adrian had done it. I was like, damn, that's sick. And I saw that, and I was just, I mean, wow. I've said this before, but Adrian's like one of my favorite riders to watch. And so it's kind of like, I see him do something and I'm like, well, it's Adrian. I can't expect to do what he can do. So have like fair play, have it.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? How even riders kind of at the top end, if they see someone do a gap, even if you don't necessarily think it's faster, you kind of, you're a bit envious of it. You want to be able to do it. I have exactly the same feeling when I see someone do something. I'm like, that's sick.
I think you just have to believe that everyone has something special. Like there's certain things that make me special, that make me fast, obviously. And I leave it to other people to do other things. And it's like, you know, once it comes down to race day, I'm battling with Adrian and I'm beating him and he's beating me. So it's not like, you know, he's just better than me. It's just in that scenario, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
And you have to be confident in your own style, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And I think normally I would have, but I was still healing from my hand at that point. And yeah, I just wasn't at full confidence yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Does it take you a while to get back? Do you feel to full speed after an injury? How do you process it?
Yes and no. Obviously, coming back in the top 10 from two injuries. Well, we call it three because I got injured at the end of 2017 in a huge crash, and I was top 10 at the first race of that season. So it was three times in the 2018 season I came back from an injury into the top 10. And it was like, I found it was one or the other. If I have a lot of time to get back on a bike with injury, it takes me a lot of time. Like, my confidence is just definitely shaken, and I just really have to build up. But then if I'm just going straight into a race, you know, I just think my race mind is pretty good, because it's just, once I'm in a race, everything's out the window, and my body knows what to do, I know what to do, and I'm just straight up to speed. And so it's, yeah, so it's kind of one or the other. I think the last one with my hand and my ankle was tough because because I couldn't hold on to my handlebar. And so that was, I couldn't be confident. It was like, I can't ride. I can't physically ride my bike properly. Mm-hmm. So I can't ride properly. And I can't be confident when I feel like I'm going to slip off my handlebar.
Yeah.
Every bump.
Fair play. Yeah. Let's get into the 2019 season a bit then, because it started strong. And you said in the past you don't always have a great first race of the season, but
it was when I was going through uni, so I didn't get as much time on the bike. So the first like three years I think I did the U of US, I was coming out of school, so I was still in school by the time the first races were happening, and I just wasn't up to speed. So now I do focus, like I do trips like this because I need to get away, and then we have to get away and ride. And so I feel like I've done a really good job to do what I need to do to be quick coming into the season.
Yeah.
And then last year, yeah, it was actually started out, the first stage was pretty horrible. me and Remy both came down, and I think I was like 44th and he was 38th or something. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, I don't know what went wrong, but that is not great. But yeah, just trusted the process, went through and finished fourth, but that was changed into a third. So yeah, a third to start the season, which was pretty sweet. And I was happy just again, just kind of trying to ride pretty consistently. And that one was tough because Roto is not a place you just kind of lay back and ride consistently. Like, you just have to attack that place, especially in the dry, which it was. So I did feel like I rode that like just smart. So I was super happy to get third there. And then Tasmania, another just like balls to the wall, flat out. There's no 95% enduro pace. That is just 6 DH runs in a day. So that was tough to do casually as well. But I felt like, well, that one was another one that slipped out of my hands, because I think I was leading the race after the third stage or the fourth stage. And then I had that crash, which sucked because it was my second. I'd crashed farther up on this like super pedally berm track, and I just like, you're so exhausted, you're breathing out your eyes, and there's just like these berms that you're like kind of, you're aware of, but like, you know, you're cross-eyed, and like I just pushed my front in this corner, and it just, that sucks. So I got back up and then sprinted even harder to like catch back up, and I think I was back on pace, and then I crashed again in the last corner just because I just buried myself so much. So that was dumb, and I was upset. So then I went out and won the next stage, which was good, and I was like, okay, sweet. Nice. And then I went off track on the last stage. But yeah, I think, yeah, I was on good pace again for that one, and I knew it. And that was just whatever, like good racing. I was pretty happy with how I rode for the most part. And it did go to plan for everything except for that one stage that was really physical, and I just kind of washed two corners, which is whatever, no big deal.
And then, well, I guess that's one of the things with EWS as a format, you can have some fumbles, right?
Yeah, I still finished seventh at that one, I think, or sixth. You can, but some, like those ones, that was so, the time was so tight that, you know, we people like to say that, but I think the times have changed where at a race like that, you have won two small crashes, and I would have been, I think, second or third or seventh. So it's like, it does, you know, you can't really make many mistakes. You can make little mistakes, but you can't like make a big mistake and expect to be not losing position.
Yeah.
But yeah, that changes when you get to like the really big, the big races, obviously.
Yeah. And then off from there to a bit of a gap, and then it was Madeira, wasn't it?
Madeira, yeah. So super stoked to go back to that place because I just think it's such a unique place. Yeah, really, really enjoyed that one. The riding was a lot better this year, which was pretty sweet. Got some new trails, and they did a really good job to like build proper mountain bike trails, which is nice for any race organizer listening. Proper mountain bike trails are great. Yeah, that was really sweet. We got to ride the Gamble line, which was amazing, and everyone just had such a fun time doing that. Like, that was such a cool morning of practice, just because everyone always wants jumps, and like, I'm not the biggest jumper, but I still really like, it's fun to do, and everyone was just like sessioning way more than we should have, because it was just so fun. Like, just, it was just such a well-built line, so it was just these sick jumps and the berms, and yeah, so that was super fun, and I was stoked that we got to do that. And then just a lot of other good technical trails that they have there. And that one, again, that one was like way more to my plan of just, you know, really, I don't want to say conserving, but just being smart where I need to be smart, and then kind of letting it flow everywhere else, but just really keeping myself in check. And that worked with the third place. So that was, yeah, I was happy. And that's how I felt like my season had been. It was just keeping myself in check. And yeah, it was going really well. I was third at that race, and then third in the overall after that, and that was sweet. And then on to Canazé was another sick place, and I'm stoked to go back there.
It looked amazing,
the Italian Dolomites.
Yeah, but that crash looked pretty scary.
It was, yeah. So that was stage one, and it was going well, going to plan. I was keeping myself in check, like riding really, really well, and like just having a good time. And it was a really tough trail because they like routed us on and off of like three trails. So there's these super weird switchbacks and like a change of trail, and then another super hard switchback to like uphill climb to a different trail. And it was super whack, like super ghetto enduro stage, which I kind of like because it reminded me of the old days. But long and technical and some really fun parts. And we're getting to the bottom of it, and I was super happy and with how I was riding. And I remember it exactly. Like, I remember it was like, okay, there's this like this bridge with a big dip at the bottom, and it's like this big compression. So like, slow up. So I slowed up before because I knew there's a big compression. If you hit it too fast at race pace, like you'd probably just blow up. So I slowed up a bit, came in, hit the compression, and I was coming up and over the rise. And then there's this like slight right hander, just, you know, going totally fine, turning right. And then my front wheel just like pushed a tiny bit. And it wasn't just that it pushed, but it pushed, and then it went into the bank. And then, yeah, I just buckled with that force because it like my arm was outstretched, hit the bank. And then I just buckled into myself. And again, it's just unlucky in these certain places where if it was anywhere else on the trail, I would have just like ridden off the trail and like, yeah, crashed and like wobbled maybe. But this was just like, it kind of bucked me right. And then the trail just dropped straight off, and I just like flew off this embankment. And I remember thinking, like, as soon as I was out of control, I was like, oh shit, like, do not get a head injury, because I was going straight for this tree. And I was like, do not do that. And so I like just contorted myself, just missed the tree, but then I landed flat on the trail on the next switchback, which was like, I don't know, 20 feet down. And I just like crumpled. And I remember like, I guess I put my foot in my hand out, and I crumpled, and I was like, shit, like that was gnarly. And I just got up on my bike and like got up, picked my bike up. And I remember, yeah, I picked my bike up and my bars were twisted. So I went to the front and like twisted my bars back. And then I turned to jump on my bike, and I'm like, oh, just sick. And I'm thinking of like, I just pushed off my left foot, and it just like, it just rolled. Like it just wasn't there. And I was like, oh, so like I knew something was wrong. Hopped on my bike though. Like, and then just for the last, I don't know, 30 seconds, just one footed to the rest of the stage. And yeah, that was a broken tibia, whatever the outside bone is. Yeah. And then just my hand was so, so mangled. And that was funny. We just had this anti-doping talk from the UCI, which was good. It was about time. But I remember like sitting in the pits waiting for the ambulance, and the medics were like, "Oh, do you want morphine?" I was like, "Can I have that?" And Taylor was like, "Well, no, like that's, yeah, you're not supposed to." I was like, "Okay, then no." And then she's like, "Well, you're not gonna be racing for like whatever, like you're not gonna be racing tomorrow, so it doesn't matter." I was like, "No, I'm not taking it." And then go to the hospital, and my finger was dislocated and broken and just like sticking out to the side. And so they wanted to relocate it. And again, the guy's like, "Oh, you want morphine?" I was like, "No, not taking anything." And so he spent like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes trying to reach my finger back into place, and it wouldn't go. Oh. And it was excruciating. And I was just like, this sucks. Yeah. But, and he actually didn't get it back into place. He like got it kind of close, but he's like, I can't do it. Go home and get it checked out.
Yeah.
I got hooked up with another same clinic that I got my shoulder done in. And yeah, I got to this doctor, and he's like just this funny guy, super, super busy. And like, I was told just go to this waiting room, and just he'll come in between surgeries. And I was like, okay. So I'm sitting there for like, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. Like, yeah, okay. Like sitting there for a little bit longer. And then all of a sudden, like just him and like four, what are they called? Not associates, but like attendees. They just all like come in. He's got like his surgeon mask on, his full robe. He's like, okay, what are we doing? I was like, I don't know, my finger and my ankle. He's like, okay, like where are the x-rays? And I was like, I haven't gotten them yet. He's like, well, someone get him an x-ray. So he's like, put me in the x-ray. And then while I'm on x-ray, I come out of x-ray, and he's on a call, like consulting some other surgery. And I was like, holy crap. Anyways, he looks at my x-rays, and I think we started with the ankle, because it was casted. I got it casted in Italy, and the guy had done a great job casting and setting it. And I was like, okay, sweet, like that's fine, being cast for four weeks or whatever. So I don't know, a month, 2 months. And he's like, no, we don't cast these anymore. It's like, so it cut me out of the cast, put me in a walking boot. And I was like, oh, sick, okay, that's cool. And then he's like, okay, let's see your hand. And I was like, he's like, oh yeah, okay. And then just like, I think he froze it, told me to look away. And then I just like heard this like snap, crack, a pop. And he just like turned it back into place. And I looked back, and it was pretty much straight. And I was like, oh shit. He's like, wow. Yeah, no surgery, you're fine. And I was like, okay. And then he just left. I was like, okay.
Amazing.
Super, super crazy. Yeah. And that one was interesting, because that's what I wanted for, like, I guess, I don't know. I maybe regret that one, because for short term, not having surgery might have been good, and I got it back into place. But I'm wondering, because it's still super messed up, like, if surgery wouldn't have been a better thing to kind of get it to be normal again. But I'm not sure that it would have been possible. There's so many breaks in the finger and in the big knuckle that I'm not sure that it could have been fixed. And I kind of feel like that's what he said. So
yeah. I'm not sure. Which finger is it?
It's just my pinky on my left hand. Okay. But just still sticks out at a weird angle, and it's all bulgy and just looks really bad. But I can get the handlebar now, so that's okay.
That's good. Yeah, I was going to ask that. I think you missed Lazur, but you were given the go-ahead to race in Whistler, which again wasn't that far after the injury.
Yeah, that was, again, like 5 or 6 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you ride around something like that? Because it can't have fully healed. You did a bit of sort of creative.
Yeah, the ankle. So the ankle, we had about a 5-minute taping session with Tara to like just make sure it wasn't going to move. Like I just basically like casted it with tape.
Okay.
And so that one, the ankle was actually fine. I had no issues with that, which was pretty nice. It was just a little bit weak, like my calf. But I'd been like, as soon as I was given the go ahead, I bought this like special splint that was like a two-sided splint. So it went up on either side of your leg. And then, so that stabilized my tibia so I could be on the trainer and pedal and work out. So that was good. I was on that as soon as I can. Like people might forget that it's not just sitting on the couch for 4 weeks and coming back to riding. I'm I go stay at my parents', which is, I'm very thankful to them because my mom is the ultimate healer. And so I got like everything, you know, everything to kind of try to heal bone as quick as I can. I'm doing rehab. I'm on the trainer pretty much every day. Like I was one legged for a while, which is just shitty and demoralizing. But like, I do everything I can do because I'm not done yet and I need to get back on my bike. So anyways, we get to the race. The finger was a lot more challenging because it just wouldn't, at that point, it was not bending. I had barely any range of movement. So I just made a custom grip where I had this like little knob on the end of it that my pinky could kind of sit on. So it didn't have to like go around the handlebar. And then I got my dad to sew some Velcro into my gloves and we glued some Velcro the other side onto my grip. And so I was Velcroed into my grip for that race, which was interesting. And then the first test was top of the world. So a 25 minute race stage, insane. Having never ridden and still a broken hand. That one was painful and just, I don't know. It was pretty funny. I have a funny video of that, like a GoPro of that on my YouTube channel, which I just think is hilarious. I'm just talking to myself the whole time, just like waiting. Just like waiting for it to blow up. Like, okay, like when's this going to be really bad?
Fair play. So that you managed to get through that whole event and still do 29th, which I'm sure for you is, but that's pretty amazing.
It was pretty good. Yeah. I think I got third on the stage too, which is pretty sweet. It was just off the world. I think that was really slow. Otherwise I would have finished even higher up, but I was just smart. I was being smart and I rode top of the world slow, which was smart. So not regretting that decision. Just like that one again, like I said, I was just really mad at myself the previous time having not like, I guess, suffered enough to ride with a broken hand. Even though like I couldn't pull up on bars because it was my third metacarpal. So it was like attached to my middle finger. So if I pulled up on the bar, it would just pull the fracture apart. And that was super painful. And I just felt like I gave up too easily. I don't give up easily. So this time I was like, I don't care what it takes. I'm going to start this race. And if I can't finish it, that's fine. But I'm going to start this race. And that was just, it was really special because I was taking it more casual. I was just able to enjoy it, be in the moment a bit more. I was GoProing every stage and just people really carried me through that race. And it was just such a pleasure to race without pressure and just be in that atmosphere. And so that was actually kind of like one of my favorite moments of the season.
Yeah, fair play. And for a season again, which was obviously far from ideal for you, you still come away with 11th in the overall.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts? How do you feel about that?
Well, the same as the last, I don't know, 3 years. So close. I know it's there. It's just like it's just waiting for everything to come together. And that's where trust in the process and just keep going forward is all I can do and all I have to do.
Yeah.
So
fair play.
Yeah, I mean, that season was, I think I have already proved my speed. I don't need to do that anymore. People know that I can win if I'm on it. Or at least just, do well, like a top five for sure. So I don't need to prove that anymore. And it's more just now like proving that I can be consistent, which is why last season frustrated me so much because I really felt like I was doing that. Like I was really keeping myself in check and I was in it for the long game and everything's going to plan. And then again, just one little tiny moment and just kind of derailed that whole thing, which was shitty because up until that race, I was second in the overall. Second, but yeah, second in the overall, which is insane. Like second, number two in the world without feeling like I'd put everything on the line. So it was, it was going to plan, which makes it tough that it didn't finish that way.
But it shows it can be done.
Yeah, so I've made it through an entire winter of thinking that over, and we're here now, and I'm looking forward to a season of proving that I can do it.
Yeah, man. And you use the phrase keeping yourself in check. What do you mean when you say that? What's the difference between...
Well, like I said earlier, I like to do things. I'm a very excitable person. I like to have fun. And I just like to just explode, I guess. But explode in like a good way. Like it happens in my training. It happens on my rides. Like it happens everywhere. Like someone tells me some like crazy news. It's hard for me to contain my excitement. I'm just a very excitable person. And so, you know, that's when I'm biking, same thing happens. Like I love riding my bike, and I just get into the flow and I'm like, oh man, this is so sick. Like, you know, that section, and this is wicked. Like, oh, that was a bit wild. Like, I just really enjoy it, and I kind of just build in it. I have to kind of like keep myself from like, I build through a stage. I'm like, okay, like that, you've been doing pretty good. Like take it down a notch. And then start getting excited and like building, like, okay, take it down a notch again. Like, and then just knowing sections for sure, like being like, okay, do not like be a hero through this section, just get through this section. And then, working on not letting the crowd get to me too much. Like I obviously like love the crowds that we have and the cheers. And I may have had issues in the past with going a level above when there's a big crowd on the section. So just in that sense, just trying to like keep a hold on myself, which honestly sucks. Like, I don't know, I am who I am, and I like to smile. I like to be happy and have fun. And those first three races of the last season, I can't really say that I enjoyed them that much, because I was just having to hold myself back, and it's never fun when you have to hold yourself back. So it was just kind of like, I was where I was in the overall because I just put so much work in the off season, I feel like. And that work is like, I don't know, that's all, again, not very fun work. You're just working hard and doing what you need to do. And then when you get to the races and you're just not feeling like you're doing everything you can, is kind of a weird feeling. But it was working out results wise. And so it's kind of this thing where people kind of talk about it sometimes, where you shouldn't focus on the results. Like, you should just focus on yourself and the way you ride, and you'll be much more happy if you ride the way you want to ride than kind of the results you get. And that's kind of like, I really felt that, because I wasn't really riding the way I wanted to ride, but the results were great. And I was like, kind of like, yeah, sweet. Like, I don't know. Cool. Yeah, but I just, tricky. I don't know. I want to just ride balls to the wall and like have fun. Like, that's what I want to do. But yeah, I need to take care of my body, so I can't do that.
Interesting. So how are you feeling then coming into 2020? Because like we're saying, it's a few weeks away.
Yeah, I feel like the same as I did last year. Like, I would have said last year that I'm stronger and fitter and better on the bike than I ever have been. I don't know if this year would be better than that. I would say, I don't know. I had a few setbacks this winter with some old injuries coming back from my skiing days. So I had a few, like a knee and a back issue, which put me out for a little bit. But those things only kind of make me better, and that it really brings me back to the basics and like gets everything set. And I feel more balanced this year. And I just feel like good in my body and kind of good on my bike now. And I'm happy, and I'm looking forward to getting back to the races, getting back with the team. Like, Remy was away in California for a lot of the winter, so I didn't see him. And then Aylin went away to California, so I didn't really see her. And then I just went away. So like, I don't feel like I've actually spent too much time with them, which is kind of a natural, like we all live in Squamish and we all hang out and we're all really good friends. So I kind of miss them a bit. So it's going to be pretty sweet to get back home and then get to the races with them. And then same with the staff on the team, like just really enjoy hanging out with all of them. And being at the races is, with the team that we have right now, is something that I'm really trying to be grateful for in the moment, because I know that I'm going to look back on this time and this team, and it's probably going to be like the best setup that I'll ever have. I'm just trying to be grateful for what I have right now, and look forward to the first races. Columbia, I'm not really thinking about, because if it rains, doesn't matter what you do. So yeah. Just looking forward to Chile, basically.
Sweet. Yeah, you're pretty unique in that Rocky Mountain team, really, to have a group of people that all live in the same place, that are all good mates with that.
Yeah, even, like, I mean,
like you say, the supporting team around you, the staff and everyone, you all seem to be good friends.
Yeah, I go to Rocky pretty often. And then, I mean, Tara's like, we had like, I don't know, Taco Tuesday almost every week during the winter at her place. So like, I see her all the time with ALN. And then now we have Supercross Saturdays. So yeah, we're hanging out like constantly. We'll go skating together. And we're hanging out constantly throughout the winter, which I think is quite unique for a team. And it's good. It's got to obviously be a balance, because you don't want to go into the first race having spent too much time with each other, because, you know, any time, if you're spending too much time with any group of people, like, things just, you know, this thing starts to happen. So yeah, it's like a family can be the most loving family, the best family, but you travel together and shit goes sideways. So I guess there's definitely a balance to it, but I think it's really good being at home, like living in the same place, because it's super easy. We all just do our training, we all do what we need to do, and then it's like we'll hang out like one night a week, or we'll go for one training ride, or go to the gym once a week, like not planned. It's just like, hey, like, what are you doing today? And it's just, when it's that easy, you can just hang out and you see each other like a couple times a week. And it's really fun, because they're kind of two people that I can really be myself around. Like, they do give me shit for it, because I like to be different and I am excitable and I just have weird things that I do. but they kind of keep me in check with some of that stuff. But yeah, they're, I don't know, two, and they're two very different people, Aylin and Remy, which I like, because they both kind of, I don't know, I feel like we all offer each other different things, and it's really helpful to have a team that kind of, we each have something that we can bring to the table and bring everyone up together.
Yeah, it's got a nice vibe. I enjoyed watching the Jank Files films that you guys put together this season. So,
well, that's good, because cool. It's been renewed for a second season. So,
excellent.
We didn't flop the first season, so we've been picked up.
Happy days. Cool. There's one more like technical thing that came out of 2019 that I wanted to get your thoughts on, and it seemed to be the season of mixed wheel size bikes, or mullet bikes, if you want to call them that.
Yeah.
And you're obviously a very analytical kind of guy with an engineering background. What are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, I think it's a tough one, because I didn't get a chance to try it for various reasons. Mainly, I guess I told myself, I obviously thought about it tons, and like, I understand why the DH guys do it for sure. It makes sense that, you know, their runs are so precise, or they try to be super precise. They know their lines. They know where they're banking. They know where they're hitting a turn to go straight again and carry speed. So, and their tracks are so steep, and they're hitting so many big bumps that they do, like, that clearance on their ass for that smaller wheel is huge. Totally. Like, I understand that would be like just this confidence thing where you're not smacking your ass all the time.
Yeah.
And with so much suspension, they can really, compensate for the smaller wheel with a good suspension setup. And so that makes sense. And then I think for enduro, like, okay, you could carry some of that to enduro, but we're racing for a lot longer. We know the trails a lot less. They're rougher. They're more raw. They change from practice to race. And I think that we have more benefit from a 29er in the back than extra clearance or better turning of a 27.5. Like, I just think the efficiency of the 29er front and back is more important in enduro. And that's kind of what I thought. So. Yeah.
That makes sense.
That's kind of my thinking on it. I still do want to try it, because, again, it's just one of those things that I can't say that with 100% confidence without first figuring out what the other side of it is. Like, I can't say anything without knowing both sides of it. But it's just, we haven't really had you're kind of messing with the bike too. So that's the thing. I remember I was in Squamish last summer, and Pink Bike was testing a mullet set up, and I ran into them in Squamish, and they're on an Instinct. Actually, I was like, oh, sweet. Like, just, I just asked Kazuma, I was like, hey, like, what'd you think? And he's like, oh, like, yeah, I think the results were inconclusive. Like it, not one of them was faster than the other. And then we were just in the parking lot and they're like, hey, do you want to do it? Like, you want to be in the interview? And I was like, yeah, sure. So hopped into the video interview and we started talking. And as we were talking, like, I just remember them asking like, oh, would I try it? And I was like, yeah, like I'm on the Fall 29 Instinct right now. You know, trying to plug Rocky, but talk about Rocky because they're on the Instinct. And then I remember just kind of like being like, I don't know if I should talk about Change to Mullet, but it's like, I should probably just talk about the Instinct. And so I just kind of started talking like, well, like, you know, the bike was designed about around 29 inch wheels. So like, I don't really want to mess with that design. Like, I'm just sticking with the Instinct. Like they made a great 29er bike and that's this bike I'm riding. And then they cut me out of the interview. So, yeah. So, but that's just all to say that, you know, the bikes are designed around 29 inch wheels. So
yeah,
if you make a mullet bike, a mullet bike specific frame, then I think maybe, yeah, it could be really sick. Another example that I have is in Mexico, when my bike got stolen, I borrowed a Slayer, and it was 27.5 Slayer, but Fox had brought suspension for me. So I had a 29er fork on 27.5 wheels. So I did have a taller stack a bit, but just with a 27.5 front wheel. So it was super whack, obviously. But I just remember like really liking it. And that kind of shook me a bit. I was like, damn, these small wheels are pretty sick. But that bike had 180 mils of travel. But I was just like, I really vibed with that bike. And I was kind of like, oh shit, like should I try a mullet bike again? Like, maybe this is what it will feel like. But again, I think it's just, you know, I really enjoyed riding that bike. But I don't know that it would have been faster.
Yeah, so that's the difference, isn't it, between enjoyment and being fast. Yeah.
Having ridden that there, I was like, okay, like this is it. I need to ask for a Slayer. Because I need to try it. Again, like I just need to make sure that either that's a better bike or it's not a better bike. So Rocky was amazing, and I kind of asked, and I was just gonna ask if I could buy one, and then a month later, and I had a fully built up Team Spec Slayer, so that was amazing for them to do that.
Nice,
and give me the chance to try it, and it wasn't definitely not love at first ride. It was big, and it was like, whoa, this is, yeah, I don't know, it's just way different to what I'm used to, because like I said, I'd spent 2.5 years. Or I don't know, 2 to 3 years on that Instinct, just dialing it in. And I knew it exactly. I knew like just, it was, you know, as the saying goes, it was an extension of my arm, and I just knew it so well. I knew exactly how to ride it, and the Slayer was completely different. So it was really tough because I've found now, like I've had to change my riding style, to adjust to it. But, yeah, it was good. And like, I think now because I'm focusing on Chile, for these first two races, I'm going to probably pick the Slayer just because it just has extra travel, basically.
Yeah, get away with a bit more.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then, but I guess I'm getting off track here, but it's just, if I wanted to make that bike a mullet bike, I would either have to get the 27.5 version and put a 29 fork and wheel on it. Which this bike is already super low in slack, so it would raise in it, but it would raise it, but slacken it out, which isn't what you'd want to do to that bike. And then I could put a 27.5 inch wheel on this 29er, and then they have a, I think if I put a, they've done it, but like I think if you put a different rear end on it, it works. It keeps the geo the same, but then it's like 200 mils of travel, and I was like, whoa, that's like, yeah, I don't know if that's going to work.
It's getting a bit wild. Yeah.
I maybe should do it just to like proof of concept. Just to know.
But yeah, just to quieten your mind.
I did also, I don't know. Well, yeah, I was riding something else, and I did ride it as a mullet, but the bike was too small for me.
Okay.
And so that it was just too small, so that was like the kind of predominant feeling that I had on it. But it was just like the mullet was pretty good, But I just still think, like, I just like the 29er for just that carrying speed and efficiency. And there was a time when I was asking Rocky to make a shorter chainstay for the Instinct, because I felt like I was getting hung up with that 29er wheel. Like, no, it was getting into my ass, and like over steep successive drops, like this, the rear end was just kind of getting hung up, and it was taking a long time to get clear of the bump and then hitting me in the ass. And so I was really like frustrated. I was like, guys, like I just need a shorter rear end. What I didn't realize is that you could also solve that by a longer rear end. So now being on the Slayer, I've got a longer rear end, and so my rear wheel is farther behind me so that it can actually move up and get out of the way of the bump and not hit my ass when I'm going over it. So it actually, like, I didn't know that at the time, but I could have gone that way as well as getting a longer chainstay. So now that I'm on that, it's one thing that I actually really like with the Slayer. It's a bigger bike, but it actually doesn't feel as big on the descents because my back wheel is able to get out of the way more.
Yeah.
So that was what I noticed actually here in Phoenix. So it was good to come to that conclusion, because I don't know, getting on a bigger bike is scary and I wasn't sure I could handle it. So yeah, it's been good to get used to it.
Definitely. Yeah. It'd be good to see how you get on the new Slayer out in Chile for sure, man. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time, but we've got one new question that we ask people at the end that we haven't asked you yet.
Perfect.
And that is, what is something that you do every day that you feel benefits you?
Yeah, well, luckily I've listened to all your podcasts, so I know that this question is coming. And I still don't think I have an answer that I'm happy with. There's so much that I do every day that benefits me. But I thought of something yesterday on my ride. What's it? I think this is time-based and maybe very specifically based. But for me, definitely, there's two parts. Like, having a big breakfast is something that I feel like I just really like to wake up, have a big breakfast, and like be ready for anything that happens that day. And then also, like, I just overeat in the winter because I feel like I'm training so much that I'd rather be overfed and building and then able to like kind of cut some weight if I need to before the season. But yeah, I would say just having a nice, big, healthy breakfast is
sweet. Have you got a go-to breakfast that you eat quite regularly?
It changes like in race season. I also get a little bit of shit for this from the team, but I have a massive pancake that I inherited from my dad. But it's like, I don't know if I can explain to you how big it is, but it's just I don't know, regular, like, flour, oats, banana, just super simple, but just tons of calories and just easy to eat. Like, I'm growing up XC racing, I feel like you're trained to hate breakfast because usually getting up early and then you have to eat far enough before your race. And so you're up early and you're just eating porridge and it's just gross. And then all you're thinking about is how much you're going to suffer for an hour and a half and it's just going to suck. So that's like what I was accustomed to growing up. And so race mornings now, thankfully, like, one thing I love about enduro is, and being up in the field, is, I don't know, starting at like 11, it's amazing. You just sleep in and then you have some breakfast and you start late. But yeah, I just make a really big pancake, and obviously we have proper maple syrup that we travel with most of the time, so it's just really easy to eat. It's delicious, obviously. And then but throughout the winter I try not to that's a pretty carb heavy meal, so I'll do hash browns and some greens and eggs and some toast. Just a big, diverse, like the classic breakfast.
Yeah, get the day started well.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice one, man. Well, it's been super interesting sitting down and catching up and finding out what's been going on with you over the last year and a bit.
It's almost great just to catch up with you. I didn't feel like I did anything. Just talking.
Cool. Good stuff, man. Yeah, it's fun. All right, wicked. If people want to follow you throughout the season, where's the best place or places for them to head?
Yeah, so my Instagram is still probably the most consistent thing, but I do feel like I'm putting unique content up on YouTube with a lot of my practice stages at EWS's, and also I did a trail from Phoenix, and like kind of wherever I go, I want to do kind of a first run or like a calm attempt on trails in the area that I'm in. So if anyone's listening and I'm in a place that they ride at and they want me to go and race a stage for them, let me know and I'll do my best. But yeah, so my YouTube is just Jesse Melamed. I think it's just Jesse Melamed as well. But yeah, I think that's really cool stuff. And I kind of enjoy doing that because I get a lot of good feedback from that. And that was another thing my brother told me to start doing because he just wanted to see it. And I think his friends really just wanted to see it. So I just started putting, because I refilm my practice anyways. And it just takes a little bit of effort to edit them and make sure that they're good and talk in the stage. And but it's kind of fun. It just gets stressful when I don't have time to upload and we have a shitty European Wi-Fi connection. But yeah, I'd love it if I got more support on that, because that's just something that I need support to keep putting the time and effort into doing, for sure.
Yeah,
but, cool. Those are the few things.
Yeah, so people can find their way to that. And yeah, wish you all the best for a good start to 2020. Fingers crossed, Chris, this year. And yeah, we'll watch how you get on.
Let's hope it goes well. Look forward to your next podcasts.
All right, that's it for this episode with Jesse. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Don't forget to tune in to Downtime Podcast Live with Elliot and Nico on Wednesday the 1st of April at 8 p.m. GMT. That's over on our Facebook channel at facebook.com/downtimepodcast, or you can catch up afterwards on our YouTube channel. Massive thanks to KushCore for supporting this episode. Don't forget to check out what they have to offer over at KushCore.com. And if you want to be in with a chance of winning a set of your choice, then you just need to spend a couple of minutes filling out my listener survey over at downtimepodcast.com/survey. That data is super important for me to understand how I can make the best content for you and to help me when talking to brands about supporting the podcast, which is what I need in order to keep this thing going. If once you've filled out the survey, you've still got a couple of minutes spare, then leave us a review wherever it is you listen to the podcast. Give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to help support the podcast, then you can share the love at downtimepodcast.com/shop. Also, please keep on spreading the word, telling your friends about the podcast and sharing our episodes on your social media. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, look after each other, and if it's okay to do so, then get out and ride safely.